the political parties in Saskatchewan are standing up to Justin Trudeau's federal gun grab. I'm Sheila Gunn Reid, and you're watching The Gun Show. Saskatchewan remains one of the sanest, most pragmatic places in all of North America. And I say this as an Albertan. You know, we sort of have a bit of a friendly sibling rivalry on a lot of issues. We like to think that we're cooler and more conservative here in Alberta, but most of our good ideas are stolen from our very wise, down-to-earth friends in Saskatchewan. And I hope we steal this next really good idea that came out of the Saskatchewan legislature last week. Let me show you this tweet from Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe, one of the sanest politicians in the country. He says, last week in the legislature, a motion was passed unanimously calling on the federal government to devolve all parts of the Firearms Act to the province of Saskatchewan in order to allow the province to administer and regulate legal firearms possession. Our government remains committed to protecting the rights of law-abiding firearms owners and will continue to stand up against Bill C-21, that's Justin Trudeau's gun grab, while supporting initiatives aimed at the legal use of firearms in our province. A motion from Carrot River Valley MLA Fred Bradshaw calls on the federal government to devolve or pass on responsibility for all parts of the Federal Firearms Act to the province so it can administer and regulate gun possession itself. And this motion was passed with a rare unanimous yes vote in the Saskatchewan legislature. That means all parties agreed, including the Saskatchewan NDP. In fairness, the Saskatchewan NDP seem a little less radical than their federal counterparts or even their counterparts here in Alberta. And this speaks to the culture of Western Canada, that we are remarkably different from some of the other parts of this country, even when it comes down to our progressive parties. They understand sometimes what their voters are asking them for. Now, joining me now to talk about this very happy development out of Saskatchewan and a bunch of other things on the gun control agenda of the federal Liberals is my friend, Tracy Wilson, from the Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights. Take a listen. Joining me now is my friend Tracy Wilson from the Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights, and she is in my beautiful province. However, the weather is not cooperating today. Tracy, thanks so much for coming on the show. There's a bunch of stuff I want to talk to you about, but let's talk about why you're in Alberta, because the reason you're in Alberta is a reason to join the CCFR. So tell us a little bit about what you're doing here, despite the horrific spring snowstorm weather.
Yeah, I know. I was a little devastated to wake up this morning and see the snow, but you know, whatever. I'm just happy to be out here in the land of the free in Alberta. But Rod and I both flew in last night, and we are here in beautiful Calgary to take our friend Jeremy Johnson, who was the winner of our Best Day Ever contest. We're taking him out. We're going to head over to the Calgary Shooting Center this morning. We're going to go shoot some guns, play with some full auto. He's got a $5,000 shopping spree to buy whatever he wants, guns, gear, gadgets, whatever it is. Then we're going to head over to the Shooting Edge. We're going to do it all again. More guns, more shooting. There's axe throwing there, which is really fun. I'm going to kick all the boys' butts. And then he gets another. Oh, yeah, I love it. And then he gets another $5,000 shopping spree over there. And then we'll debrief tonight over an awesome steak dinner and just talk about what was his best day ever. So this was, he was the winner of a contest. You know, we've got it takes money to fight these people. And we did a fundraising contest. And this is the grand prize. So I feel kind of lucky because I get to join him and watch him just have the most amazing day. He's a great young lad from Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. So yeah, pretty fun.
it does sound like the best day ever.
Yeah,
like
right?
10 grand on on whatever you want, steak dinner to wrap it up, hanging out with Tracy and Rod.
Just shooting guns.
Shooting guns sounds great.
Right? And,
yeah. Now, one of the other reasons I wanted to have you on the show is that we just got news that the gun grab has been once again delayed until 2025. And you and I frequently joke, you know, the guns were so dangerous that they had to be left in the hands of law-abiding Canadians for 5 years from the date of their ban.
That's right. Guns so dangerous that you're forced to keep them for 5.5 years minimum, right? So, and it's funny that they've kind of extended this out towards the next mandated federal election. So, you know, it kind of gives nod to the fact that this is purely political. This is a big, crazy idea that was born out of the political opportunity of the Nova Scotia shooting. They capitalized that on that and the grief that Canadians were going through. The problem is they had no idea how to do it. I've said right from the beginning, it's virtually impossible. And here we are. They still have no clue what they're going to do. Nobody wants to touch it. And I'm perfectly happy with that.
Yeah, but that doesn't stop them from spending money on it.
Oh, yeah.
I think the National Post reported, they say the National Post reports it as Ottawa, but I'm like, that's the federal Liberals. Don't blame it on the city. But Ottawa's already spent $42 million on their Liberal gun buyback. And I use big scare quotes when I say buyback because, you know, federal government didn't own these guns in the first place. So they've spent $42 million. They haven't taken, thankfully, this is one of those times where I cheer for government ineptitude. They haven't taken a single firearm from the hands of law-abiding Canadians. And yet, you know, like they're just blowing money on this thing left, right, and center.
Oh, yeah. And they've budgeted, I think, $30.4 million over the next 2 years on this program, which, you know, is a considerable amount of money. But it's also a strong indicator that they're not actually going to buy any guns, because that number would be in the hundreds of millions, if not billions. So it's just the running of the bureaucracy of a program that does not even exist is costing taxpayers tens of millions of dollars a year. And for what? You know, that money would be better rerouted focusing on stopping the flow of illegal guns across the border. But hey, call me crazy, right?
Yeah, I was just reading this National Post article, and thankfully, you know, a good friend to the firearms owning community, Senator Don Plett. He was the guy behind getting this data. There are 60 public safety department employees working full time on this. Just think about the difference that 60 extra cops in a city like Toronto would make. Instead, we've got pencil pushers trying to justify their existence in a cubicle in Ottawa somewhere.
Yeah. And I mean, meanwhile, they still have no idea how to do it. But you're right. Think what 60 cops could do out there for public safety, or 60 more border agents investigations, like search through cars and rail cars and all the things coming across the border. You could not just find illegal guns, but you could stop drugs. You could stop human trafficking. Like there's all kinds of benefits to public safety, to focusing your resources and your attention on the things that really matter. But this government is intent on focusing it on legal gun owners instead. And meanwhile, they've had zero success. And yeah, I also am cheering their incompetence.
Yeah. Yes. Go government incompetence for once in my life. We're also finding out a little bit about some of the companies that are wanting to become involved in this, and some of them that actually have become involved in the buyback program. For example, IBM was awarded a $2.27 million contract to develop, design, and implement the program, which nobody's done yet, so that's okay.
Shocking.
But who else is involved in this that we know of?
Well, the Liberals have tried really hard to get Canada Post involved, and it's sort of been a big hoopla in the media again, which is funny because they declined 2 years ago, so it's not really news. But it's been dragged back up into the news cycle by the anti-gun lobby groups, who, of course, are losing their minds that the doors of gun owners aren't being kicked in yet. And Canada Post is once again saying, forget it. Like, they are not equipped for a program of this caliber. You're talking about 500,000 rifles. I can't even imagine what that looks like, right? So Yeah, it would be incredibly unsafe and for everybody involved. And yeah, nobody will actually touch it. Law enforcement has refused. The Army's refused. So yeah, IBM's happy to, of course, spend a whole bunch of money developing a program, but nobody's there to carry it through. So yay.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm glad you touched on the numbers of firearms that are potentially affected by this. I think we'd have a tough time ever even coming up with an estimate. I think yours on the high end is probably right. The federal government, however, says that there will be, and the numbers, like the distance between their low and high end are like miles apart, that between 10,000 and 15,000 newly prohibited firearms are in the hands of Canadian businesses, and anywhere between 125,000 and 200,000 are owned by licensed individuals. But on the other hand, how the heck would they ever know? Because many of these firearms moved from non-restricted, so you were just allowed to own them, all the way over to prohibited. And there's really no record of that firearm. So I don't know how the government could know how many SKSs are out there. Like they're just guessing at this point.
Yeah, well, and they intentionally lowball it, because then when if it ever does get off the ground, when participation is low and they only manage to scrounge up 100,000 guns, they can, you know, claim that it was some major success. That's exactly what happened in New Zealand. But there's 97,000 legally owned AR-15s in this country alone. And that's one of 2,000 models and variants that they banned, right? So I know the CSAAA did some work using import records, because although the majority of the firearms that were banned in 2020, other than the AR-15, were not registered. So they have no idea who's got them, where they are, and how many are out there. However, import records used by the CSAAA, they came up with a number of about 518,000 firearms affected. And I think that would probably be far more accurate than Bill Blair lowballing some number to make their failure look more like a success, right?
Well, and I think too, besides hiding their failure by lowballing their numbers, I think it also hides the cost of the program.
Yes.
Because, you know, when they're saying to the Canadian public, who sometimes in the urban centers, they really don't know any better. And that's no slight on people in urban centers. We have a lot of firearms owners in urban centers. However, you know, like people might see guns as the crime in that's the guy shooting up the playground,
right,
instead of the sports shooter out plinking ducks in a field on an early morning. But it does hide just the sheer cost of this program.
Oh, yeah.
When you lowball it and you only say that it's about 20% of the actual cost. And so, you know, I think this is going to be a fiasco akin to the gun registry, where they said it would cost, you know, this amount, and then it cost this amount.
Yeah.
And didn't stop any crime at all.
Yeah, I think this will be so monstrous that it will dwarf the boondoggle that was the long gun registry. So that was, they said it would cost about $2 million and save lives and stop crime. It ended up swelling to over $2 billion. Never solved a single crime, never prevented a single crime. Even the Liberals say they don't want to bring it back because it was such a miserable failure. Yet here they are willing to do something that, honestly, it would dwarf the, you know, the failure of the long gun registry by fivefold easily.
Yeah. Now, I wanted to talk to you. I mean, this news is like a year old, but I'm sort of headed towards talking more about Saskatchewan with the rest of our interview. And Saskatchewan, they've gone one step further, whereas Alberta and Saskatchewan have both said, we will not direct our contracted RCMP resources to kick in the doors of law-abiding Canadians in our provinces, because we are dealing with a spate of crime, thanks to Justin Trudeau's lax bail policies, his revolving door criminal justice system, his permissive rules around drugs and like hard drugs. And so we're dealing with the societal and social fallout of that. We don't care about law-abiding firearms owners. So Saskatchewan and Alberta said that nearly right away. They said, we're not having our cops participate in this. Saskatchewan last year went one step further and said, look, if you are one of those opportunistic businesses, maybe like your IBM, and you want to participate in the gun grab, get yourself a healthy government contract, you're not doing it on our watch. If you want to participate in this, you have to be licensed by the province to do it, and that you cannot be taking federal funding. So basically, it makes it nearly impossible for any Saskatchewan-based business to participate in the gun grab. They'll have to find somebody from outside the province if the feds are going to do it there. And I thought that was great.
Oh, yeah, I think that's great. And the other thing, with both Alberta and Saskatchewan requiring them to have a special, like, confiscator license that would only be given by the province, it sort of rests with them. It's like, you need a license to do this, and you have to get that license from us. How many of those licenses do you think would be approved? I think that's the idea, right? It's like it's like the imagined license that you're never going to get. So, yeah.
I think it's wonderful. And then very recently, last week, Saskatchewan government, the whole of government, and all parties agreed to a motion wherein they demand the devolution of the Firearms Act. So the Federal Firearms Act, they want control of administering it, which is a great way of taking this, I guess, existential power, if you're a gun owner, away from the federal government. And it was wonderful to see the NDP in Saskatchewan break ranks with the federal NDP, who are basically just acting as the socialist caucus of the Liberals at this point.
Yes.
The NDP in Saskatchewan, and it pains me to say this, they are more pragmatic than the NDP in the rest of the country, and they know what side of their bread is buttered.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, traditionally, before the far left style of NDP that we have now, the NDP was kind of the party of the little guy, right? The working man, the, you know, the salt of the earth type people. And that's a really good way of describing what gun owners are. So it is nice to see them kind of go back to their roots, at least in Saskatchewan. But yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of debate over the last week about this idea of scrapping the Federal Firearms Act, devolving it to the provinces, which would be kind of more of an American style model where
I'm listening.
Right. Where firearm laws vary state by state. It would be like that here, province by province, you know, and then, of course, you've got provinces like Quebec where gun owners would just be hung out to dry. Right. I mean, the Quebec government would love nothing more than to continue kicking their law-abiding gun owners right in the teeth. So, you know, there's some, I got some thoughts on that. But more than anything, I think it sends a really clear message to Ottawa just on how badly they have screwed up this entire file. They've lost the faith of the provinces, of all parties in the provinces. And I think in general, Canadians who are sitting back going, what is even going on? Because you would have to be absolutely blind to not see that while the Liberal government and the NDP screw around with legal gun owners, you've got crime and violence raging out of control in the city streets across this country. You know, they're telling you to leave your keys by the door so intruders can come and steal your car. You know,
like, yeah, put your TV in the trunk.
Yeah, we've got these soft bail policies, right? Police are screaming for change. I mean, the whole thing is just a big mess, right? And it's, I think average Canadians are really seeing that now. Like, do you feel safer? Canada has never been more violent than it is now. And yeah, this whole thing will be just adding more fuel to that fire. Of people being disgruntled about the way the Liberals are handling the whole public safety file. So, yeah, I got feelings either way about devolving it. It could go good or bad depending where you are. And, of course, I'm worried about all my friends across the country. But, yeah, kudos to Saskatchewan for consistently standing up for their citizens, and that is their job. Government forgets sometimes that they're the servants, not the masters, and that's really nice to see.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it could become a provincial voting issue then all of a sudden. And we know how well mobilized firearms owners can be when it becomes a voting issue. I mean, it was one of the reasons Stephen Harper won back in the day, is because the firearms owning community mobilized after he said he would scrap the gun registry. And we all said, okay,
okay, let's do it.
Let's do it. And so, I mean, if it becomes a provincial voting issue, then provincial politicians will suddenly become accountable to that highly motivated voting block of the firearms owning community.
Yeah. And I think you would also see a really big shift in where people live. You know, I mean, I don't know, it would almost be one of those perfect filters where, you know, you would have kind of gun owners, kind of a mass exodus out to the prairie provinces and, you know, screaming anti-gunners. Maybe they would nestle down in Quebec and Ontario. And I don't know, maybe that would be okay too, you know.
Well, you know, Alberta's calling.
Yeah, no, it sure is.
Now, I wanted to talk to you about one of the things that the CCFR does that I think is one of those rare things in modern society, because it appeals to that awful thing of toxic masculinity. You've got the Gunny Girls calendar and you've got a call out going.
Yeah, that's right. So this is a fun project. And yes, every year.
I love it.
I take all kinds of flack from, you know, pearl clutching women taking a ride on their fainting couch over it.
Right.
We do a calendar. And the idea behind it was, when we first started the CCFR, I wanted to do a national women's program where, you know, the vision was having range days all across the country and we could take thousands of women every day, or not every day, but every year to gun clubs across the country, let them try the shooting sports, expose them to it, and also influence their voting patterns. And the problem was, we had very humble beginnings at the beginning of the CCFR. And Rod said, yeah, you guys should totally do that, but find a way to fund it. So we were sitting around the table drinking wine on a cottage weekend and thinking, well, how can we as a bunch of girls get together and raise money for our own project? And I was looking across the table at some of the most beautiful, talented, amazing women that I've ever met. And I was like, you know, I would love to put you girls with your cool guns in a really classy calendar. It's not your, you know, it's not a beach babe calendar. There's no bathing suits. These are, you know, classy, beautiful photos of really cool women with amazing firearms in some of the most beautiful locations across the country. And every girl in it is just your average gun owner. You know, I mean, I'd like to think we're above average, but these are average girls who just show up for the weekend with a bag full of stuff. We have these big sleepover parties at cottages and we go out into the wild and take these photos. And, you know, it comes together and it looks like this professional product, so much so that I get accused of using models. And I'm like, no, literally, these are just the girls at the club, you know. But yeah, so every year we do a call out for that. You can find that stuff on my social media. And yeah, we just ask, send a couple of pictures and a little bit about yourself. We've had girls anywhere from 18 up to 60, every color, shape and size. And, you know, it just sort of, to me, it highlights the amazing women in our community coast to coast. And then, yeah, I end up with about, you know, $40,000 to $50,000 a year that I can spend on range days to influence more women to come into our sport. So it's just this perpetual adoration of each other and women lifting up women. And yeah, I do take flack for it, but I let that roll right off my back because to me, it's probably one of the most meaningful things I've done. And yeah, I think they are all supermodels in their own right. And I love to promote them.
Yeah. I mean, it's for women, by women.
Yeah.
Men get to buy it if they want. But it showcases just the severe normalcy of the women in the firearms owning community. We're not fringe radicals, despite what Justin Trudeau might say. We're moms. No. We're business owners. We're sports shooters. We're outdoorsy. Sometimes we're not even outdoorsy. Sometimes we just want to go to the comfortable indoor range. You know, like, we're not weirdos. We're just like everybody else in the community. And that's what I love about the calendar, is it really showcases who and what we are.
And it's really fun for the women too. Like, we've had some women who have tried out. I remember one girl in Alberta actually sitting out in her car at the Airbnb, and I'm waiting for her to come in. Finally, I went out to see if she was okay, and she was crying. And she was really nervous about coming in, and She had a really crappy ex who had told her, you know, you're never going to make it into that calendar. You don't belong in it. And I have to say, her pictures turned out to be some of my favorite. And she is a far cry from the woman who was sitting in her car crying that day now. She's right. Just, you know, kicked the door open on a new life. And yeah, we all remain friends after, and we do events, and we just have this big tribe now of these really powerful women. And I love it.
I love it. And yeah, you know, if the radical feminists want to get mad at you, great. I'm sure you care as little as I do.
Yeah.
Tracy, tell us how people can get involved with the Canadian Coalition for Firearms Rights. You're doing great things there. You're fighting with the government.
Oh, yeah.
You're bringing legal challenges against the federal government all the time. You're not just a lobby group. You really are a vehicle for change.
Yeah. So you can find us and all the cool things we're doing at ccfr.ca. There's a little button there that says, why join? And it's a running live list of everything we've done. It's really long. So there's a button that even says skip to after the gun ban, because, you know, that's kind of the more juicy recent stuff. You can find all the stuff about us there. Propertyjustice.ca is sort of our sister website, where you can find all the legal action, the court challenges, the charter challenges, all the work that we've done in the courts to fight this government and their unholy attack on legal gun owners. And of course, we've got a huge YouTube channel, lots of resources on there, a bi-weekly podcast, and a national TV show on Wild TV called CCFR Radio on the Air. And of course, follow my Twitter, because it's always spicy.
Yeah, it is. It's fun.
Yeah.
And you guys have one of the best merch stores for your cause in Canada. And even in North America, I think it's just cheeky and fun and really great products there.
Yeah, thanks. I take a lot of pride in that. Our team just kind of figures those things out on our own. We've got a small group. We're always looking for more volunteers. You can send an email to volunteer@ccfr.ca and come and join the team and help us out. And yeah, we've grown a lot in the last 8 years, and we are a big national powerful group, and we're going to do some really great things.
And strike fear in the hearts of the liberals, which I love so much. Tracy, thanks so much for coming on the show. I shouldn't keep you any longer, because you have the best day ever ahead of you.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the range right now, go shoot some guns and help this guy spend some money.
Awesome.
All right. Thanks, Tracy, Sheila.
Thanks. We'll have you on again very, very soon. Well, this is the portion of the show that is dedicated just to you, dear viewer, because without you, there's no Rebel News. We would never take a penny from Justin Trudeau to do the work that we do here at Rebel News, which means we rely on your support. So I want to know what you have to say, you know, unlike the mainstream media, who only seem to care what Justin Trudeau thinks about them. We actually worry about you at home. And are we giving you the other side of the story? Do you have an opinion to share? Share it with me. Send it to me via my email, sheila@rebelnews.com. Put gun show letters in the subject line so that I know why you're writing to me, because I get a fair bit of emails and some of them are cantankerous. But don't let that be the bar for entry. For example, if you are watching a free version of the show or a clip of the show over on Rumble or on YouTube, and you've sat through an ad before the show or the clip, I appreciate you for doing that. I just want to make sure that the show is available to you at a price point that works for you. And so sitting through those ads really helps. And if you have watched us there, maybe leave a comment in the comment section on Rumble or YouTube. I do go looking over there sometimes, and that's actually where today's comments come from. They're on my show from last week with my friend Chris Sims from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation, and we were talking about the catastrophe of the inflationary federal budget. Apparently the budgets don't balance themselves 8 years later. So anyway, the first comment comes from Canuck One on Rumble. And he says, I'm an average middle-class Canadian. For the last few months, the total amount I pay for the carbon tax on my gas bill is more than the actual amount of the natural gas that I used. Yep. So go tell that effing liar to stick it where the sun don't shine. Like a true psychopath, he lies through his teeth with such conviction that he managed to fool a whole bunch of dim-witted Canadians, devout followers, no doubt. You're obviously speaking of Justin Trudeau, who tells us that if we give him more money for the cost of everything, by the way, because the carbon tax is added on every step of this supply chain, but if we give him more money, he will cycle it through the hands of 1,000 bureaucrats who have done nothing to create or build wealth, and then suddenly give you back more money through the magic of liberalism. It's crazy. He says that people will get back more than what they pay, but how can that possibly be when you're paying, as our friend here points out, more in carbon tax than you have on the gas itself? However, I will take a slight disagreement with you when you say that the people who Justin Trudeau fooled with his lies are his devout followers. They may have been, but I think the shine has come off that pricey little bauble. And there are many people who are just fleeing the Liberal Party, either as members or voters, to a more common sense conservative approach. I think people are finally seeing through the lies. There are many of us who knew that Justin Trudeau was a liar and unqualified from the very beginning. It just took some people, I think, in the eastern parts of this country a while to learn it. But Stephen Harper's campaign slogan directed at Justin Trudeau was, "He's just not ready." Looks like he was not ready and will never be ready. After nearly nine years of learning on the job, he still has not learned on the job. And I don't think being a prime minister is a thing you should actually learn on the job. Actually, let's do one more. It's from Chickadee Roses, who writes, "Always remember, we must always remember that we must take everything that he says, Justin Trudeau, and turn it 180 degrees to get the real truth." Like when he says he's a feminist, but he was grabbing journalists with the old kokanee grope. Or how he says that he's an anti-racist, but he's the guy who did blackface. How he says he's not divisive, but he's the guy who gets up in front of journalists and calls 6 million unvaccinated Canadians fringe radical white supremacists. Yeah, you are right. He is a guy who projects what he is, his character flaws, on other people because he thinks we're all just as awful as he is. So with that title, we should be reading that the carbon tax will not impact the people with giant mansions and indoor swimming pools. I think most of us already know this. Yes, Justin Trudeau said that you won't feel any impact of the carbon tax unless you have a giant mansion and a bunch of cars and a bunch of indoor swimming pools. Again, that's how he lives. That's not how the rest of us live. And people with giant mansions and lots of cars and indoor swimming pools, they can afford the carbon tax. It's the rest of us who can't. Well, everybody, that's the show for tonight. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll see everybody back here in the same time, in the same place next week. And as always, don't let the government tell you that you've had too much to think.